Now I can go to work. Maybe you've had this happen on the way to a ball game or on the way to a concert or when you're driving from here to there, you encounter somebody holding a sign. Hungry. Can you help? Maybe you're like me in those moments where you're kind of paralyzed for a second. You're not exactly sure what you should do in those moments. You wonder if the little bit that you have to give is going to make any difference anyway. There are times you say in the back of your head, I wonder if I give them money, if they're going to use it for the things they say they're going to use it for. I wonder if I give that money, am I just going to cause more harm than good? Do you ever have those questions go through your head in those moments when you're confronted like that? I know that I do. And maybe you're like me, the question that really gets you, and if it, you're honest, the one that gets me most of the time is the question that says, how much do I got to give to just make them go away? What do I got to do to just get this over as quickly as possible, put something in his hand or her hand, put something in the cup in order to appease my guilt or make it go by quickly? Those are the questions we have in those moments when confronted by somebody who's sitting there asking for our help. I don't have any easy answers for that moment. I still struggle with what is the right thing to do, but in studying the book of Acts, I found that this week's story addressed that issue in ways that I maybe never considered. Here, pick this story up with me as the church encounters just such a moment. One day at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Peter and John were on their way into the temple for prayer meeting. At the same time, there was a man crippled from birth being carried up. Every day he was set down at the temple gate, the one named Beautiful, to beg from those going into the temple. When he saw Peter and John about to enter the temple, he asked for a handout. Peter and John at his side looked at him straight in the eye and said, "Look here." He looked up, expecting to get something from them. Now you see, that man would have been at that temple gate each and every day when people came there to worship. He had a group of people who carried him up, set him at the temple gate, let him sit at the door of the church all day with his sign, making a little bit of money he had. At the end of the day, they come and they carry him back to his place, and then the next morning they come and do the same thing. Day after day after day, this man sat at the temple gate, never allowed to go inside the gate of the temple, never allowed to walk in to the doors of the church. For in the first century world, it was believed if you were somehow carried some sort of illness, some sort of physical struggle or physical disability, that was somehow a sign of God's curse upon you. And if God's curse was upon you, then surely you couldn't go into God's house. You simply had to sit at the gate of God's house and hope that God's people would have a bit of mercy for you in that moment. So here it is interesting that Peter and John, the first leaders of the first church of Jesus Christ, take on that situation in a very unexpected way. Peter said, "I don't have a nickel to my name, but what I do have, I give you. In the name of Jesus Christ, walk." He grabbed him by the right hand and pulled him up. And in an instant, his feet and ankles became firm. He jumped to his feet and walked. It was an insignificant detail in that little passage that is probably the most important detail of that entire story. He said he extended to him his right hand. You see, in the first century world, you would not have touched that man, let alone touched him with your right hand. Your right hand was your godly hand. This was the hand that you used to pay your offerings at church. This was the hand that you did business with. This is the hand that if it touched something impure or undefiled, something that looked cursed, if you touched something, that hand was no longer right with God, and then you weren't right with God. So here at the door of the church, Peter extends his right hand to this man, which meant he saw beyond the curse. He saw into his soul. He saw beyond the man's suffering and saw him as a child of God. He offered him the right hand of fellowship. He said, I don't got money, but what I do have, I give you. In the name of Jesus Christ, I give you my hand. I give you my friendship. I give you my fellowship. I see that you are truly a child of God. And then he invited him to walk. The church, the first church, knew that its job was to move beyond charity into hospitality, to move beyond charity into community. Sure, they could have put a few dimes in the man's plate and he walked by him again the next day and done the same thing, but they offered him the hand and invited him into wholeness. Church of Jesus Christ is to be a place where people are not to be left sitting at the gates of the church. But the hand of fellowship is to be extended to them and say, hey, what I've got to give you, I want you to come on in and walk. And look at what happened. The man went into the temple with him, walking back and forth, dancing and praising God. Everybody there saw him walking around and praising God. They recognized him as the one who sat begging at the temple's gates, and they rubbed their eyes, astonished, scarcely believing what they were seeing. The man threw his arms around Peter and John, ecstatic. All the people ran where they were at Solomon's porch to see it for themselves. What an image of the church. A place where we say, man, a year ago, that guy was a real mess. But look at him now, dancing around, praising the Lord. A place where people get an opportunity to be healed and transformed, a place where lives become different. Three things that this story tells us we need to be about. First, the Church of Jesus Christ is to have eyes that see beyond people's shame and to see into their suffering. A place that extends the right hand of fellowship to those who are often left seated on the outside looking in. We have to ask ourselves, who's on the outside looking in? Who will have a hard time walking through the doors of the church because they feel that the shame that they carry will be a barrier to their inclusion? Is it single moms who walk in here with their kid just waiting for the first person to say, oh, where's your husband? Is it the person who's been through divorce, just waiting for someone to ask that question and hovering in the corner, worried that when they tell people of what's happened in their lives that the church will no longer invite them in? Is it people who suffer from addiction or some sort of physical or mental illness? In some communities, it's people of different races and ethnicities who are made to sit at the outside of the church gate, not being welcomed in. And I know that here at Redford Aldersgate, in the neighborhood that we live in, we don't want to be sitting at the gates. We want to extend the hand of fellowship and say, you are welcome here. Second thing the story tells us We want to be a place that isn't content to just leave people in their suffering. You want to know why I invite you to give to CAS? Because CAS is interested in leaving people sitting in their suffering. They're doing things to make sure that homeless folks have jobs and are moving on to some sort of dignity and self-sufficiency. You know why we give to the NOAA Project, that central washcloth on a handout, it's given to an organization that believes in the dignity of others? Why do we put people on the board of the children's home? Because those are orphans who would be cast off the side, and that place is, we aren't going to leave you sit at the side of the road. We're going to invite you in. Roberta has started the healing place here. Free mental health services, psychotherapy, for people who wouldn't be able to afford it or take advantage of it, people who would be left sitting at the gate of the church. Roberta offers that. Why? So they don't have to sit there, but they have a chance to walk. Let's be interested in ministries that don't just put coins in plates, but offer people legs. Legs to walk and to be the people God has called them to be. And finally, let's be a church that dances, when people get healed, when there's transformation in people's lives. Did you notice that the first church grew by leaps and bounds? People had to come and see this place where people who'd never been allowed into the community before were suddenly being invited in. I wish you could have been down here Friday night when I was doing the hustle with Kim Palador in the basement of this church with a whole bunch of teenagers. If we started to say this, oh my gosh, this is going to be this fun here, I think maybe I can invite my friends next time. I think they thought they were going to come dance with the pastor and it was going to be really boring. But we danced and we celebrated and we had joy as a way of saying to young people, you are welcome here. You are safe here. The work that we're going to do in the Wesley Hall is a chance to say to the youth of this community, you don't need to sit at the outside gate and look in and wonder what's happening here. You are invited here. We're going to take you on mission trips here. We're going to help you walk and change and transform the world. The basketball hoop in the parking lot is just a way to get kids closer to the door of the gate. So we can be a place that dances and celebrates. So I know what you're saying. That's a fancy preaching, preacher. You don't believe any of that, though, do you? Believe it? I've seen it. Thank you, Facebook. Facebook gives me lots of interesting things. This last week, a friend of mine put a story up on Facebook. It was a story about a place where this kind of healing happened. And it happened in probably the most unlikely place in the United States. It happened in Angola Prison in Louisiana. Prison that holds the most maximum security prisoners of any prison in the United States, the most brutal prison. A miracle happened there. Because the warden decided that all of the ways that they had been dealing with the folks weren't working, it was violent, and nobody was getting healing and transformed. So what he did is he invited Bible College to come in to the prison. Not just Bible study, but Bible College. So that those prisoners there could get their degree. So they could become pastors in their own right. And out of that came a second program called Malachi Dads, where now almost 500 men in prison have gone through a year's worth of training in order to figure out how to be a better dad behind bars. And that program has taken prisoners who used to not be able to stand on their own, and now they walk tall and proud and have become a light of change and transformation in perhaps one of the harshest places on the planet Earth. Because somebody said, we aren't just going to leave these men sitting at the door of the gate. We're going to offer them the right hand of Christian fellowship, and we're going to expect that they can walk. I'll let them tell you the rest of the story.
Singing with the heavenly hosts. This is with the love of Christ that
we greet you all, and we are here tonight to honor some very, very faithful men, and they are the 2010 Malachi Dad graduates. Let's give God a hand, have a praise for those men. That's why we're here.
It was a long year that we've been through. The process, we were taking classes, we was going through programs and books that was actually guiding us how to be a better father.
When men are in prison, they realize their mistakes. When they realize that mistake, they wanna do something different. And they wanna teach that to their children.
All it takes is one bad decision to pretty much alter a person's life forever.
These children of inmates, there are 5 to 7 times more likely to end up in prison.
My biggest fear about prison is that I would meet my son in prison one day.
And we want to prevent that. That's why we're going into prison. We want to prevent these kids from following this pattern of crime. We want our societies to be safer.
And when I found out in April of 2000 that I had a son, Matthew, that had just been born on March 8th, immediately the first year, I began to write him letters and I began to minister to him and just share my heart and what the Lord was doing in my life and my life here at Angola.
Well, I've talked to my daughter more than I ever did, but I don't even know what it's like to embrace her, to hold her. I've been gone that long and I need to hold her. I really do. I really do.
We got strawberry, vanilla, tutti frutti, stepbrother. And get your world-famous snowballs here.
This day, Returning Hearts Day, it's focused on the father and the child alone.
It means so much to them because, number one, it means we trust them. We, the prison, trust them to be worthy of this visit.
All right. Now I'm walking with the angels, high above the mountains.
I see my son now.
There's no restrictions on how they should show affection during that moment.
How you living? Oh boy, man, you getting tall.
We'll be walking with the angels high above the mountains. We'll be singing with the
heavenly.
I'm not miss you, girl. I love you.
They get to spend a day together alone.
Ready?
Just the child and the father. They can build that relationship that was broken. They can restore what were the hurts that were there. And the father can focus on the child. And the child gets that attention.
He looks like you. Hey, man. Hey, how you doing? Give me a high five.
Right here.
To give back is the opposite of take, take, take. To give back reflects true rehabilitation.
A Malachi dad is successful when he's reconnected with his children.
In spite of his situation with his father being incarcerated.
He's reconnected to his children, and he's reconnected with his children in a different way, in a transformed way, in a transformed life, a changed life. And in due time, the child will respond to that, and that relationship is restored.
And what can they give but love to their kid? They have no money, but they can give love.
Peter said, I have no silver or gold,
but what I do have, I give you. In the name of Jesus Christ, stand up and walk. And he took him by the right hand and raised him up. And immediately his feet and ankles stood strong. Jumping up, he stood and began to walk. And the emperor entered the temple with them, walking and dancing and giving praise to God. That's what the church looks like.